Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Let's do that same section about how long you waited, but without waiting so long.
Hello, and welcome to Still Watching, a weekly television podcast from Vanity Fair. I'm Richard Lawson.
I'm Chris Murphy.
And I'm Hilary Busis. We're here to discuss the third episode of Season 2 of the Max series, and just like that, titled Chapter 3.
Chapter 3. I came home from the Manhattan School of Music with Beethoven's concerto still ringing in my ears.
Later, Lindsay Weber and Bobby Finger from the podcast Who Weekly will be stopping by to discuss celebrity and the Sex and the City universe.
But first, a quick recap for Chapter 3. Carrie's podcast is canceled, but she's back in the vocal booth to make her audiobook.
As I called John's name, I worried. I'm sorry. I just missed a word.
You okay there?
Yeah.
Carrie struggles to read about Big's death, so she fakes COVID to try to get out of it.
I just tested positive for COVID, so you're going to have to get an actress to record it. I'm so sorry.
Carrie finds comfort from an old friend with a new face, Bitsy Von Muffling.
Honey, the second year is worse than the first. That's the dirty little secret nobody tells you.
Charlotte and Lisa are the hot topic at school when they end up on a MILF list.
I do think it's wrong that in this day and age, women are still being judged solely for the...
Here it is. We're number 2 and 3.
Seema is shaken after her Birkin gets stolen in broad daylight.
What's happening to the city?
And Brady is heartbroken in Amsterdam, and Miranda and Che fall out after Miranda's phone interrupts Che's pilot taping.
You ruined the family scene!
Well, I had my own family scene, and it was real.
Oh.
So.
The first most important question I want to ask you both is Che's show supposed to be good?
Oh, boy.
Oh,
my little cannoli.
My little cannoli took the place of Andre Rashad for the most used phrase this week. My little cannoli. I decided after this episode, it is absolutely supposed to be bad. There's no way it's supposed to be
good. Here's my question. In the show's universe, was the show good at some point and then it was ruined by network notes?
That feels like the narrative that they're kind of telling, although the creators...
That they keep pushing Che toward doing something that they don't want to do.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. But, and it's corny.
Yes.
And because it's for a mass audience, which I...
Unlike Che's stand-up, Che's incisive stand-up.
At their comedy concerts?
At their comedy concerts, of course.
I kind of think that this might be the show getting a little meta about Che Diaz as a character and the reaction to them... I don't know if you guys read the Brock Collier piece in New York Magazine that came out. That's, I think, a sort of subtle damnation of the character. Mm-hmm. And I feel show is kind of addressing it by having Che be like, I don't want to be this corny, but like the show is making me be corny because that's how it's understandable to the most amount of people.
I think it's
although
going
one
further.
Would imagine that the show is going to listen to Sarah Ramirez more than Che Pasa is going to listen to the concerns of Che.
Right.
Can we talk about Che Pasa?
Che Pasa is the name of it. It's really rough. I think the show is actually going, maybe this is too big of a swing, but I think they're making Che out to be a full-on villain. I think Ooh. What they did to Miranda was so terrible at the end of the episode in terms of getting that. Miranda made some mistakes, leaving her phone on. That was a really, you know, Miranda humiliation tally up to one. That's on her. But Che's response was really narcissistic and really kind of crazy to insinuate that their pilot is the same as Miranda's kid was so out of pocket, especially when the pilot is so clearly terrible and bad. I think it's a bad yeah. pilot and Che might not be a great person. Also, we totally just brushed over the Lyle of it all. The husband didn't even come up once this episode.
Which is insane.
Insane.
Actually.
Truly insane
like
storytelling.
Like a major revelation from last episode. And, just
and Miranda's
like...
just continuing on in this relationship as though it's not an enormous betrayal not to tell her right, that they yeah. were married yeah. and are still married.
Che is yeah. a villain. The pilot is bad. That is the flag that I'm planting in the sand.
I will push back on one thing, and I mostly agree with you, Chris, but I do think that Miranda saying to Che, you don't know how it feels because you don't have a kid, and Che saying, well, that makes two of us, being like, you don't understand what it is to have this show. This is a huge deal. That is, I think, aligning a little bit with the famous Tatum O'Neill episode from the original series about the shoes and like, oh, you don't have kids. Like, that's all that matters. Your shoes are frivolous. And Carrie being like, no, what I care about matters.
Also matters too.
I kind of think that that's the echo they were going for a little bit.
But the Manolos were more worthy than Che Pasa.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
My little cannoli.
As much as Tony Danza seems in the pocket though.
it gives you like that sort of hearing him say super sitcom-y lines does give me like a beautiful smooth brain feeling of like watching an old episode of Full House or something. Like
yeah.
there is something about
There's
a sitcom.
Art to that delivery.
Yeah. And the way that he said non-binary.
You want to be non-binary? Be non-binary. You want to have a Bob's Big Boy haircut? It's your hair, not mine.
Non-binary.
Non-binary really did tickle
it's a
me.
Little, it's a little Gilfizad.
Yes, 100%. I do appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, Che is going with the notes of not sort of fighting back against the powers that be. It is now, you know, Italian and Irish instead of Mexican and Irish, it seems. So I don't know. I don't trust Che. Maybe that's something that I have to come to terms with, but I don't trust Che
it's
right
funny,
now.
It's funny, though. I think the showrunner is also supposed to be a villain, which is
more so.
Yeah, which is interesting because it's. I feel like it's the show's way of being like, you thought Che was bad.
Where do you get a load of
right,
this?
Where
do you get a load of this person?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're trying to have... Because they don't want a token character, so they're trying to present a range of, well, two characters.
Two terrible non-binary characters.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I think it's an interesting theory that Che might be kind of emerging as some sort of villainous role. Because, like, the world of Sex and City, the Sex and City universe, has done that before where there's a turn. Mm-hmm. Berger's so mm-hmm. charming, and then he very much isn't. You know, there's a whole litany of shorter-run characters who initially present well. And I think that maybe with Miranda returning home into the fold of breaking the tattoo spell of L.A. a little bit might be kind of indicating toward that. Like, Che represents a door for Miranda, but is actually not meant to be the long, I don't know, the long
Well, or for... she goes through that door. She finds that she doesn't like what's on the other side of it. And she goes back home and she realizes, oh, wait, now what do I do?
Well, that's right. So interesting.
It's sort of like the end of The Graduate. She's kind of like, the music is playing and she's suddenly realizing she has no idea where to go next.
Wow, yeah. Imagining Che and Miranda like on that bus. Just side by side.
Hello,
really,
darkness.
Wow, that's amazing. I will say, and maybe I'm too sentimental about Sex and the City, but I was sort of upset with how rude Miranda and the tattoo artist were being about old Miranda. Like, obviously being a corporate lawyer might not be as chic and as fun and as woke as Miranda is now, but like...
Chris, I feel like you and I have personal stakes.
Yeah, personal stakes being sort of partnered with lawyers, even, public defender on my end, but still. But I will say that, like, old Miranda, and I guess we didn't see her that much doing, like, law things. I don't know how much of a cog in the machine she was, but she took so much pride in being partner and working really hard.
Wasn't her storylines in one of the movies that she went to, like, a really cool, progressive, female-led firm that allowed her to have a life? Did I make that up?
No, I think that rings a bell.
It does
I think that's what
bell.
Happened to her at the end of the second movie.
Yeah.
Which
it's not canon, though.
It's not canon.
So, the Irish nanny's not canon. The
Birds of My Labia, not canon.
Canon.
No, the Nation of Abu Dhabi, not canon. But I think that also we are reminded in this episode that the fancy lawyer job, afforded her a fucking townhouse in Brooklyn Heights.
To be fair, she bought it in Brooklyn Heights in like 2002. Times have changed.
Right, and now it's worth 10 times what she paid for it, I'm sure.
But it's probably paying for her sojourn to L.A., too. I don't think Che is putting her up, you know?
No, Miranda's got to be paying her own way.
Yeah, Miranda's got to be paying
Network
her.
Money is better than streaming money.
That's true.
Yeah, I do think it's a kind of funny way to talk about, like, a certain class of white women in the last however many years sort of being resistance pilled, like, and that's sort of Miranda's narrative, where it's like, wait a second, my eyes have been, now that I'm financially secure, like, my eyes have been open to inequity and stuff that I haven't really been paying attention to, including myself. Yes. And so
instead of turning to the only, like, people of color that they know and being like, wait, did you know about this? And they're like, where you been, Miranda?
Exactly. So we mentioned Miranda's return because of Brady, who broke up with his girlfriend in, I thought, a pretty well-faked Amsterdam in one brief street scene. No canals, but that's okay. Brady was such a vexing character last season because he was just so gross. Like, just, like, having sex, like, loudly one wall away from his parents and
teen
all that.
Boy.
I liked the way that they kind of showed subtly at the end, not so subtly at the end, that his real feelings about this breakup, this sudden breakup with his girlfriend while they're backpacking through Europe, was kind of because he's like, everyone's breaking up. My parents are breaking up. Do we welcome Brady back into this fold?
If he can be a character and not just like a gross device, I think sure. I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of curious about what that kid is like. He doesn't seem to be a hard-charging Miranda. Is he a Steve? Is he also?
Oh, he seems way more Steve.
Soft-hearted.
Too laid back, too soft,
Which is probably why he called Miranda, because he probably was like, I need the practical. What time's my flight home? Like, where are you going to meet me? Like,
instead of Steve being like, ah, oh, kid, that's too bad.
Brady.
Want to go shoot some hoops?
Yeah, I mean, one, I'm happy that Brady got Miranda back to New York where she belongs. So that already gives him some points in my book. I felt for him, you know, first heartbreak. But I do think it does open up Brady, speaking of Charlotte again, and if the trailer, if I'm remembering the trailer, it seemed like there might even be some, like, Brady-Lily, like, flirtation thing
Which
would be thrilling to have the two moms of the group.
I mean, then it does become, you know, like, The Force Awakens or
because
whatever.
That would be so exciting. I think that, like, maybe this makes me go creep, but it's like, that kind of entanglement is sort of fun. Oh. Like, so, not that, like, we know that Brady is sexually active, I think Lily is old enough at this point, right? She's probably
she's 16.
That would be really fun.
Yeah, and it would be fun because that would create obvious tension between Charlotte and Miranda in a way that we've, like, not really seen yet. And to have Carrie sort of be in the middle, ooh, that could be really fun, I think.
Some sort of blow up, some sort of, I don't know.
Yeah, like Lily's the little princess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We can see that happening.
So Miranda is contending with her decisions from season one. Carrie is contending with what happened to her in season one. She's recording the book. I thought this was a really well-articulated plot line to sort of, like, slightly indirect way to talk about healing and grief and all that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny because last week we talked about how we'd left grief in season one and we were moving into a more fun space. Yeah, a little bit of an oopsie. And I was a little bit like, oh, God, you know, we're going back to this. It's a little dreary. But I will say, I thought Sarah Jessica Parker, she nailed it for me. And I think they gave her the space in the recording studio to really sort of, like, go there. And I like the sort of, like, not absurdist, but the sort of breaking with time of, like, the shower water playing in the background.
And the words going like a CAPTCHA.
Yes, like a CAPTCHA, which are hard to figure out. But I ended up being more pro than negative. And I also liked, and this might sound really rude of me, that they ended up, like, comparing Big to, like, a Birkin and then, like, lost jewelry. Like, that was the big metaphor at the end. Seema was like, yeah, it's like me losing my Birkin.
And then, my favorite beat of that storyline is Carrie faking COVID, which felt like classic sitcom. Like, oops, I got myself into a pickle and now all of my friends are acting like I wish that almost they had teased that out more and longer and made her, like, go deeper into her deception, because I feel like that's always a fun place to find a character in a sitcom.
Because it did become like, oh, I don't want to go to these plans tonight. Mm-hmm. I'll just text them and say I was exposed to someone yesterday. And so it was just to be safe. Like, COVID, I mean, it's really callous to say about someone that killed a lot of people, but, like, it was, at its most cynical, a good excuse.
We've all done it. Yeah. That's Carrie and her villain era in a really relatable way.
And and it led to a really fun button on the episode.
So good.
A great and just like that.
And just like that, I got COVID.
first one of those that I felt like was actually like a fun little kicker. And that's how I got
with
COVID.
A crane shot of a New York City street. That felt classic.
Yeah. Yes.
That really did.
Yeah.
I would say overall, I feel like this episode, you know, maybe Che aside, I felt like this episode was really firing on all cylinders in a way that I don't think the show has before. This was, I think, the first And Just Like That that felt like a TV show and not just kind of like random meandering plot lines about some people that we used to know.
Oh, yeah. I will say, I don't believe for one second that Carrie Bradshaw had never gotten COVID. That was so ridiculous. Like, it's your first time. I was like, she would 100% be someone who would maybe flout the rules a little bit. And, you know, I could see her having COVID.
You think that
before.
She was, like, going to secret parties in Times Square?
Or shoe sales, you know.
Yeah, illicit sample sales.
Yes.
But I like that to me. That, like, I don't want shows to be like, remember Zoom and like do that plot line, or I don't want too much COVID content, I guess, at this point.
Because but it just because it feels hacky.
It just feels, I don't want to revisit that period of time, but yeah, it can feel a little hacky. But this was like, no, of course it's now forever in our consciousness, you know, like, and so I like the characters commenting on like, now she gets it? Like, that's so late, you know. I don't know. I just thought I think it was funny.
Yes.
In a way that, and just like that, hasn't been that often that funny.
Yeah, and I feel like Sarah Jessica Parker is very good at, like, goofy, kind of, like, frantic, like, humor. I sort of wish that it had given her more space to, dig herself deeper.
Yeah.
She gave up so fast when Seema came over.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But when her nameplate was about to get stolen, which actually I did gasp, I was like, oh, please don't take the nameplate.
Security, help! Somebody do something! I have COVID! Security!
And then she screams out, I have COVID.
What was she trying to accomplish?
No idea, but I laughed out loud.
Was she trying to get the thief to run away?
I think so. I think that was it.
It didn't work.
Yeah. It did not work at all. I did
and
not
then they
understand.
Still just
it
didn't
actually
do
created
anything.
It created the chaos that let the thieves
get away.
Kind of.
She really facilitated the theft.
Yeah, for her own selfish interest.
Aided and abetted.
I love the Seema gag with the pistol lighter. I thought that was really cute because Seema has been shown to be sort of like this freewheeling character, but I was like, her carrying a gun might be a bridge too far.
She immediately gets a gun after her Birkin gets stolen.
But she would have a little pistol, very convincing looking Derringer lighter. I thought that was cute. And I thought the bag plot line, as clumsily maybe as it was sort of grafted onto the grief jewelry thing, was cute.
Yeah, and like a conscious echo of a Samantha plot line that we probably remember from the original show.
When
Samantha covets a Birkin bag. That was in one of our favorite episodes, one of our top five episodes of Sex and the City as chosen by Still Watching. It's in the abortion episode, which is sort of
is
strange.
It really?
Bedfellows.
So weird. Okay.
Sort of tough is the way that Big is dead now.
Yeah, everybody is grappling with their fertility, either lack thereof or unwanted pregnancies, you know, their checkered past. And then Samantha wants a Birkin bag, so she uses Lucy Liu's name.
Right.
I will say I loved the
those equivalent experiences.
Oh, 100%. Exactly. Just like Big dying is the same as losing a Birkin.
Yeah.
I do appreciate the meta commentary about like the impact of Sex and the City with Seema losing her Birkin, where she says, like, maybe they just stole my wallet and they ditched the bag. And then they were like, no, everybody knows what a Birkin is because Sex and the City made all of us know what a Birkin
exactly.
is.
That's, yeah.
And then I didn't like at the end how, like, her bag was like, there's no way a Birkin would be lying on the Upper East Side next to her townhouse and some woman wouldn't see that and run for the hills with that bag. The fact that she found it was so ridiculous.
You're assuming people on the Upper East Side are, like, looking at the sidewalk.
That is true.
On the sidewalk.
They float above the ground. I forgot about that.
They also, I don't know if you guys have seen the documentary, The Truffle Hunters, about the men in northern Italy who have dogs that sniff out truffles. On the Upper East Side, they do have Birkin-sniffing dogs. So that's actually why she's seen Seema. Because that's why the dog stopped.
100%. I'm surprised Richard Burton III didn't get it.
Yeah. We should also mention, circling back to our first Among Equals, Carrie. I also love the Bitsy scene, who has always been regarded as this silly character, one of their old stock joke characters, like, all those old society ladies. Like, this show, Sex and City loves to poke fun at those women.
Mm-hmm.
But so I thought it was nice that she gets this moment of, like, clarity and actual sensible advice to Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
Is Nathan Lane dead in the show?
In the show, he must.
In the show,
he
must be. Nathan Lane is no more. That
as
is
of
tough.
As of last season, too.
I forgot about that. Okay.
R.I.P. Nathan Lane.
Mm, God.
Which means he came out to Bitsy and is now living in Provincetown with someone. He's living with Smith Jarrett in Palm Springs.
No, it was really great to see Bitsy. And she was, again, she did a great job of sort of, like, playing sort of the ridiculousness of the facelift.
$100,000 facelift, and I still have to come here for a $25 mustache wax. God's clearly a man.
But then also giving some actual sage advice.
Yeah, I think the show is always better, you know, when it engages in some world building, when we have these recurring characters who can pop in and out, who can play off of our main characters, you know, whether they're ridiculous or whether they have pathos or whatever. It doesn't feel fan service-y. I do feel like when you're in this milieu, you probably do bump into a lot of the same people that you know.
Yeah,
all the time.
You know, at the dermatologist or whatever.
Especially now that Carrie is very much in a moneyed world. Mm-hmm. But certainly when she goes on her big Bergdorf shopping spree to make herself feel better, like, Carrie was always a shopper, but, like, now she just, like, has money.
Yeah.
And so, of course, she's going to run into people like Bitsy because that's the stuff she goes to. And I think the show is, like, acknowledging Carrie was never downtown in location, but she was sort of downtown in spirit.
That's strange in the original show that she would live on the Upper West Side.
That Samantha was the downtown one.
Yeah.
Made sense, but also Carrie should have been too.
She should have, but I mean, now it makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, she's right.
Yeah, exactly.
And I do like her cute little neighbor. I'm sorry that all her jewelry got stolen and that Carrie didn't do anything to stop it.
Yeah. How does the neighbor afford that apartment?
No clue. I forgot.
She was one of Bulgari's five designers to watch, Richard.
Oh,
were
right.
You not listening?
Sorry. In my Bulgari monthly is late this week.
No, that was so, the clumsiest exposition I've ever heard.
It's not good.
Did anyone remember her from season one? I really forgot her.
The plot line was that she was too loud and Carrie felt old, right?
Yes. Yes.
And then she saw her sort of humanized somehow because it was a breakup, I think.
And now they've exchanged keys and can kind of look out for each other. And I think, I don't know if the show wants to use, you know, younger characters as grandfather them into being main characters and follow sex and dating through their lives. I kind of feel like the sex and dating part doesn't matter as much writ large, and it's really just kind of about, like, the characters we already know and their three new counterparts. If it wanted to go in that direction, I don't know if this is necessarily the show to be able to say something insightful about the way 20-somethings are, you know, living and loving in the city.
Yeah. Well, here's what could happen.
Hit us.
Carrie's walking downstairs, going outside somewhere, and she sees Steve leaving her neighbor's apartment.
Lucette's apartment.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's what happens.
I mean, Miranda moved on, right?
Yeah,
right.
Steve deserves to as well.
He does.
You know, because I thought that, like, they used her well for this metaphor of, like, we're just going to lie in bed to get, like, we can get up eventually, but we don't have to get up right now. Like, she's become a functional character, at least for the show's metaphors, right? But yeah, if they wanted to involve her more. But no, I think this show is much more about, like, the experience of being a woman in your 50s, and all of that implies romantic stuff being part of that, but not the entirety, the way the original show was focused on that.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that our producer, Emily, put in our show notes that some of this, I think this is a good episode, but I did feel some of the strain of having to juggle 6 to 7 characters. I think Seema's little purse plotline could have had an extra beat. I also think that the MILF plotline with Charlotte and Lisa Todd Wexley, there needed to be one more. They see this hot kid, and which is
kind of interesting.
An interesting line.
I
guess he could be 18 even then. And then nothing really comes of it.
It did feel like there needed to be a final beat. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it wasn't sort of just like with last week, some big moral moment about racism or a big moral moment about the MILF list. You know, it just sort of ended with like a funny like gag or whatnot. But yeah, it sort of did need to be rounded out a bit. I will say, I took a page out of Hillary's book and I wrote down all of the names on the MILF list.
Well done.
Well, actually, Chris, I want to say that I did the same thing.
Look at us.
And I looked up the people on the MILF list. And everybody except for the top three, there's a character that we see briefly who's the number one MILF. The number one MILF.
Then but she's a step MILF, so it
doesn't really count. Yeah.
Then Charlotte and Lisa, and the rest of the names on that list appear to be people who work on And Just Like That.
Wow.
Oh,
I love that.
Which is a fun little Easter egg.
So Michael Patrick King is one of the top MILFs at Constance Billiard
or
whatever.
Not Darren Star.
He was 11, actually. So close.
Right.
But there's you know, PAs and some writers, stylist.
Kia Hill, Rachel Palmer, Angelica Lee, Cassette Spence.
Spence is a real person who works on And Just Like That.
Jamie Ella Gross, Amani Ju, and number one MILF, Kayla Charles.
I thought it was a fun plot line. I mean, I think that they should go deeper into Lisa Todd Wexley and Charlotte being ensconced in that prep school. They're doing that, but like, I think that's ripe, fertile territory, you know, and this was a little bit of a dip in, but I think they could have given it a little more time. I also appreciated theater-wise when Nicole Ari Parker playing Lisa Todd Wexley was like, I feel like Blanche DuBois because she played her on Broadway.
Back into the Sex and the City, with Blair Underwood, played Robert, Miranda's best boyfriend ever, other than Steve.
And I believe Daphne Rubin Vega was Stella?
Yes, she was. Yeah. I saw that. I took a picture with Blair Underwood afterwards, too.
She was
great in it. Nicole Ari Parker, really great Blanche DuBois.
I believe it.
I will say it was a nice excuse to get Naya involved with the women, given that Miranda's still in LA until the end of the episode. And it was nice to see her interacting with people and not just on her own journey, although even that could like have a little bit more time in terms of the juggling of the storylines, because I was like, oh, and that like Keegan-Michael Key lookalike guy.
And sound-alike.
I literally thought it was him, and then I saw his muscles, and I was like, that's not him. But I was like, oh, it's like she's getting hit on left and right, and yet we haven't really been able to go there because we're juggling seven storylines.
Chris, I think you're right and smart to point out that like that was a nice new connection point. We haven't had like a Naya, Lisa Todd Wexley solo. I mean, this is barely a solo storyline or duo storyline for them. But I remember in the old days, and I don't want to do too much comparison to the old show, but it's kind of impossible not to, when like you would get that little thrill of like, oh, weird, Charlotte and Samantha have a combined plot line this episode.
Yeah.
Like it always felt like fun when the non-Carries had their own separate things together.
Yes.
And I think that because there are seven characters, six-ish to juggle, maybe that could be a strategy going forward, which is like, this week, instead of six plot lines, we have three pairs of two.
Yeah. I even felt that way when Miranda called Charlotte and not Carrie about the Brady situation, because of course she would call Charlotte.
Because Charlotte has kids.
Charlotte has kids. And it's like, it was fun to see. I was like, oh yeah, they have their own relationship, obviously, that is outside of the Carrie sphere.
Oh my God, it's such a mess.
Do not worry about Che right now. You are doing the right thing. There's nothing more important.
Thank you for saying that.
Brady's going to be okay.
I love you
too. Bye.
It was really fun to have four women at a tabletop. Not three, not seven, four women just felt like home a little bit. And I was like, I don't even care who the four are. That's a nice place to be in.
And I thought it was cute that Naya was like, we could be talking about this important stuff. And then she gets the text and she's like, oh, never mind. The cute sound guy.
And that also sort of feels like a wink from the people who write the show, where they're like, okay, we know the last season we were a little heavy handed. And this season it's going to be about relationships.
Yeah. I invite whenever the show wants to kind of like pull the curtain back a little bit and be like, hey, we heard you last season. Like, we're going to be conscious about this stuff.
Hey, it's J. Diaz.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I also think that it was a nice evocation of the fact that, like, I think it was really Sex and the City that, like, got conversationally people to be like, oh, or maybe it was Friends, too, but, like, did you hear from ATM guy if you met some guy in the ATM vestibule or whatever? And, like, so sound.
A lot of coinages.
Coinages, exactly. Now we have sound guy.
And poor Naya. Naya's still kind of in search of a storyline.
Yeah.
In every episode, is she just going to, like, meet a hot guy, and then nothing
that's
happens?
And then that's it.
Yeah, it does feel like they're spinning their wheels with her, which is a shame because Karen Pittman is such a good actor.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all good.
They should give her something to do. Yeah.
I'm hopeful now that Miranda's back that will sort of jumpstart a Naya storyline or plot line. And even like a Miranda, I want to see Miranda outside of the Che universe, outside of Che Pasa, if you will. So I guess I'm still hopeful because Karen Pittman is so good and she does make me laugh. Like, she's great at these line readings. I find her rapport with these other women fun when we get to see her do it. But yeah, I'm ready for her to text one of these men back. Like, let's get the show on the road here.
Yeah, it seems very clear that her marriage is over. I don't know if she hasn't gotten that memo. The rest of us certainly have.
Yeah. We're not holding on hope for Rashad, Andre Rashad.
Start meeting a guy of the week and
they
then
keep
find
throwing
out
hot guys at her and then it just doesn't go anywhere. Yeah.
She has to meet a guy of the week. She has to go home with him. She has to then find out what's wrong with him and then find a new guy the next week.
Exactly. And then go to brunch to talk about what's wrong with him and then find a new guy.
You satisfy our hunger for the show's old beats through Naya.
Yes.
Yeah, because she's the most single one of the bunch. I mean, you know, Seema's single, but like that's a different story. And Naya, I mean, I don't want to use this word because it's often a pejorative leveled at women, but Naya's maybe the more desperate of the.
I think she would agree.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like getting such a thrill out of a mic adjustment says that maybe you
it
need to get out
It was a sexy
more.
Mic adjustment.
One time at the, I was doing something at the Paley Center in New York, an onstage Q&A. With the cast of Quantico, the short-lived FBI sexy Charlotte.
Priyanka Chopra's big brand
in the U.S.
Introduction
to America. Yeah.
Exactly. And so everyone was getting mic'd up, and they finally got to Priyanka, and the guy started reaching with his mic out, and she goes, oh, no, no, no. We're not doing that. And then she had to have a hand mic.
Good for her.
Yeah, that's honestly really, know your worth. Know what you're...
I was like, she's fabulous. Still watching, we'll be back in just a moment. And when we return, we'll be talking to the hosts of Who Weekly about celebrity and Carrie's short-lived podcasting career.
So, podcasting might be dead for Carrie Bradshaw, but it is very much alive for our next guests.
I'm very excited about this. Bobby Finger and Lindsay Weber are the hosts of Who Weekly, always wanted to say this, a podcast that tells you everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't.
They're also New Yorkers who have a keen eye on celebrity and the media. Bobby and Lindsay, welcome to Still Watching. You guys are fans, right? Like earnestly, not ironically?
Huge, of both. I mean, I can't speak for Lindsay with regards to And Just Like That. We're both. I will speak for her with regards to Sex and the City. Earnest fans of the original show.
Yes.
I'm an earnest fan of And Just Like That. Every second of it, I think Lindsay, there's like a little more irony there, maybe. But when you like it.
Not even irony. I mean, I just think I have a little bit more of like a realistic, grounded take in it than you do.
Such a Miranda. I mean,
when I watch this show, I ascend to like, some other dimension, like a plane of existence that I've never been to before, because I feel completely demented every time I watch it in the best possible way.
I'll be like not this episode was fine, and Bobby like, I cried twice, and I'm like, where did you cry, in what parts did you cry?
And then when I explain happening. Where I cried, I feel crazy when I explain when I cried, because there's nothing particularly like necessarily moving about it, but it's like the show turns buttons I didn't know I had. Like, it's very weird. I'm obsessed. I never want it to end. I might die when the show ends. Like, it's, I need this show
to
survive.
Well, I think that's how the show's going to end, is everyone dies.
Yeah.
I
mean, we all just go out together.
It'll be like the 6 feet under montage Tedros of, like,
shows up. Yeah.
Che being suffocated right, and right. Miranda being buried under sand on the beach. And
oh Brady driving a Prius across
like
the desert.
Under. Yeah.
So we were talking, Chris Hillary and I were talking in the recap portion of this episode about episode 3. Mm-hmm. And about how it really clicks. Like, it feels like the show firing mostly on all cylinders. Do you agree with me? Does this feel like a kind of higher watermark for the show than maybe a lot of season one?
Totally.
Well, this morning we did a recap for our Patreon on the first two, and I hadn't seen the third yet. Mm-hmm. And so Bobby kept like alluding to how the third like brings it together or something, or just it becomes better. And I was like, I don't know. I feel like I'm still very much like warming up to this tone again. I'd forgotten that this show has like a very confusing tone that you have to almost like get into mm-hmm. or get out of or decide what it is. And I just had forgotten how like maudlin and sad it can be. I was a little bit like unsure. And then I saw the third episode and I agree that it's much, much tighter of an episode, and it's much more, instead of picking up where we last left off and reminding us about all these things that everyone is doing, it's honestly too much that everyone's doing. So much exposition. It almost falls finally back into kind of the rhythm of the original show and what makes it so funny. So I agree that it's much better than the first two. It's good.
Okay, well, there's
Bobby,
an answer to both of those questions.
To another
before
plane,
I answer the question.
And what part made you cry?
Did I ascend? Yes. When did I cry? When Carrie was reading the audiobook.
So professional.
Thought that was just so... I thought it was so moving. I thought it was just, again, like the tonal... Not just like the tone of the show, but the tonal shifts that the show takes within a single episode are so funny. Like, there's Carrie grappling with the death of John. I thought the stuff between the producer and her was so sweet and well done. Like, it's just very well... The show is very well observed, usually. But then that is coupled with, like, literally COVID jokes. What I liked about the first season was that they didn't really linger on COVID. I don't want to hear what Charlotte has to think about COVID. Like, I don't need to know any of those things.
That is so true.
They bring in COVID, like, as a punchline a couple of times in this episode. And I cry. How does this show do all of these things at once? I know that some people will say it does all of these things badly. But, like, I think it's, like, firing it on all cylinders and everything is a success.
It definitely does all of those things.
I'm so glad you guys are privy to this.
I did just think of something that I think would have been a good COVID storyline, which would be Charlotte frantically trying to get her kids to the front of the line
to
get their vaccinations.
Oh my God.
She would absolutely skip.
And like calling their pediatrician every day, and the pediatrician is like, I'm sorry, it hasn't been approved for that age group yet. And her just like freaking out.
Lisa Todd Wexler would like have her own supply of vaccines.
Oh yeah, they go to a concierge doctor.
She'd hoarding be giving
vaccines.
Them, actually.
She'd be hoarding them.
Lisa's that's... like, I already got the booster while people are waiting to get the first shot.
Yes.
But do you feel, I feel so like funny. Seema might have been like, do vaccines really work?
Yeah, fairly true. Yeah, not in an anti-vax way, but she would talk about how strong her immune system is and how rarely she's against she
while smoking
sick.
A cigarette.
Yes.
I want to know, I'm such a big fan of Who Weekly, patron subscriber, and I really do love when you rank people from Who, so celebrities, mm-hmm. sort of like, it's going to be like the lowest of the totem pole, some of the people that we might not know, to them.
Not great name recognition.
Yeah, mm-hmm. no name recognition to sort of the biggest
household names.
Yes, the biggest A-list. So mm-hmm. we sort of have a bigger cast of characters this season on Just Like That. We've expanded. We have our Lisa Todd Wexley. We have Naya Wallace. We've got Seema Patel. And we also have Che Diaz. Mm-hmm. So I would love if you would indulge us and go Who to Them for the new ladies and Charlotte, Miranda, and Carrie. So Seven and
oh
Che.
God.
And also
Wait,
Che.
Including the including old girlies? Them.
Che's number one
and
them.
And then Che is
and
the
then
biggest
Carrie.
Them.
And then I think it goes Che, Carrie.
No, no, it doesn't.
That's blasphemous, but I love it.
It goes Carrie, Miranda, Charlotte, I think. Definitely. Mm. And then of the new people, I think Che is definitely...
Like, the ghost of Samantha no, comes the ghost after of Samantha. Charlotte. Let's not lie.
And then I think Che is the number one themiest of the new cast members.
Totally.
Yeah.
Lisa Todd does the most... I think it's... And then I think it's Lisa Todd, Seema, and then Naya. Because Naya...
I would argue Seema ahead of Lisa Todd because I think Seema gets the most Carrie scenes. Seema is the Samantha. So totally. Seema gets the like most one-on-one. If anything, Seema gets the most information out of Carrie than anyone else does on the show for some reason. Like Charlotte's like in outer space the entire time. So LA. She never actually asks any questions.
You did mention...
She's like, Diva, don't worry. I sent you chocolates. It's like, what?
Well, I like that what she are sent you talking caviar. About? She sends chocolate. She sends tequila.
The best
like,
part of
I love
being
that
friends
thing.
With these people is they just give such
they're
extravagant
so
gifts
rich.
All the time.
So rich. No,
they're just
so
constantly rich. Sending each other like Harry and David baskets.
I know.
You it's mentioned, true. Lindsay, that Lisa Todd has so much, like, an abundance of character descriptions that, like, Lisa Todd's family could have their own spinoff and you would watch it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's why I put Lisa above Seema because Lisa. When you said it,
she's
I know that that's
formed.
Not the plan, but it is. There's so much like detail in Lisa Todd's life. And maybe that's a factor of it just being a bigger family. So you have like more going on at home. But it really does feel like there's a kind of an entirely different show going on there. And that's why I liked episode 3, because Lisa Todd got a little bit more integrated with Charlotte again. Like sometimes the show can feel a little siloed. If I'm going to criticize it in any way, which pains me, I like when they're all sort of getting to know each other and figuring each other out. I love all of that. Like the MILF list killed me. Was it inappropriate? Maybe. Like, I don't know, but I was like cracking up. You know, I think the third episode was the funniest so far, too.
I also liked how they brought back the spirit of Bunny, Trey's mom, from by bringing in his mom, her husband's mom. So, like, that was very, like, that was a very much an echo of it. But it's like we're dealing with it in a different context and different time with, like, different topics. But it was giving Bunny. And I liked that they're giving her more kind of, like, pushback or conflict or whatever, because these women obviously live like the most perfect lives ever and they have to give them something to get stressed about.
Yes, yes. To have a black bunny is so fantastic.
Yes, who's
to
pretending
read
not to
Lisa's
see anyone.
Outfits.
Bobby and Lindsay, do you think in the world of Sex and the City / and Just Like That, is Carrie Bradshaw them?
We debated this last season because it didn't really feel like she was out there doing stuff and being a them. But she got invited to the Met, which I think is an important... Maybe the writers heard a little bit of feedback from everyone being like, can we have her be famous? Can we have her be glamorous? Yeah. Like at one point in Sex and the City, people knew who she was. They camped her. They were like, we love your book, blah, 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 all
that. She had all those French fans.
We love the sex. So we like, love the sex. Yes.
What happened to that? Like, is that something that is still a reality for her? Or is she kind of like washed up? Like, what is the... What is going on? And I kind of do think that she is one of those like New York City... Andy Cohen, maybe he's a little bit bigger, but like Julia Fox, Chloe Sevigny, she's like Candace Bushnell. I mean, she is kind of like a local woman about
a New
town
York them.
I think she's a New York them
for
sure.
You know who
for
I
sure.
see at everything still? Michael Musto.
Ah, Michael Musto, that's a good example.
And she's a lot chiquer than Michael Musto. No offense to Michael Musto, who's great. But like, I feel like it's that kind of like, you aren't a New Yorker until you've had a spotting of Carrie Bradshaw somewhere.
That makes sense.
That sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very New York based celebrity, which I guess because New York has a lot of culture within it that gets broadcast out. You can be a bigger celebrity from just being a New York celebrity. But like she feels very much like that, especially being a famous writer. We don't have a ton of that or as much like Truman Capote-esque famous like writer types as Friendly we maybe Lewis. Used to, mm-hmm. you know, like
I did find it.
Fran Lebowitz, who actually like produces work,
right?
Writes books.
The podcast stuff. I think Carrie starting a podcast in the first season made so much sense. It seemed like a very elegant way back into the Sex and the City column. But when the podcast ended in episode 2, I kind of understand why she didn't want to do it with regards to like advertising stuff, I guess. But it's weird to me that like I think of Carrie as just in terms of like a voice in that world. To me, that podcast would have been a slam dunk, top of the charts. Like I find it weird that like Carrie, New York, them, probably broader top tier who, but like New York them for sure. It's weird to me that the podcast wasn't like this huge phenomenon, but maybe that's just not fun to write. Like maybe it's just not a fun thing to have on a television show, a successful podcast.
Well, don't you feel like the podcast was supposed to be, you know, how every episode of Sex and the City, she sit down and she write at her computer, like, you know, why do girls do this and guys do that? Like whatever bullshit she wrote at the time. I felt like they were going to transition that to be like what the podcast ending. Was, which is like her giving advice and then kind of spinning that advice into the theme of the episode, which I always really liked Sex and the City for, because it was always like living an experience and then summing it up.
Like
you
modern
know?
Family
and
episodes or something.
Yeah. I thought that was what we were going for. And then it kind of, they were like, okay, we don't want to do the podcast anymore. So we're going to blow up the podcasting industry.
Was
no,
that triggering?
Thank you.
Very triggering.
How many vagina ads have I had to read? And of course, you can always rewrite them. You can always make them your own. It doesn't have to be that much drama.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because it feels like they'd rather write Che's pilot than do Carrie's podcast. I think so too. What do you think of Che's pilot? Is it supposed to be bad? Is it supposed to be good? Where do we land on their pilot?
I mean, I think it's supposed to not go through so that they can come back to New York. But I mean, maybe that's just me trying to predict getting Miranda back to New York.
You hate this. Lindsay's like so mad at me. You hate how much
like,
I love the show.
I feel like I hate it too. I love it. I feel like we're replicating anytime any of the Sex and the City women leave New York, there is this just kind of like ticking clock, like the countdown clock to when they get too bored. Mm-hmm. I've been there by whatever city they go to, be it Paris,
Atlantic
be it
city.
LA, wherever. Mm. Yeah. Till they get bored of it and they come back. And I just think that this is like a very interesting, like another version of that, where it's like, where whoever said, Carrie was like, well, when do you come back to New York? And Miranda's like, I love it here. I love LA.
But she even says it's like pretend life out here. Which is just like, no offense to LA listeners, I think every time I go to Los Angeles, I'm like, this isn't real.
I think the show had to address that in the years between the original show ended and Just Like That started, that LA did for a long time sort of take over American cultural hegemony with like influencers and all that stuff and Kardashians and whatnot. And New York did cede a little of that ground that I think it's sort of weirdly gaining back now. But yeah, so I think they had to put someone in LA because like if you're talking about like the great like hub of culture in the US, like nowadays, like you can't just talk about New York. Like LA has to be in there somewhere.
It's just like it always just very funny to me where when they do this thing where they don't, they have a love life and they have their other life and they like, and it's not balanced. And that always ends up fucking with each character has gone through this where they get bored. And it's like, so Miranda's just like bored. She's like going to AA to like have something to do, which is insane. Then she's like cleaning the beach of its seaweed or something to have something to do.
People.
And she's essentially like Che's like sex, like she's at home, like waiting to have sex with Che, like waiting for Che to get home to like strap on some leatherware.
It's like, it's like Carrie in Paris.
It was Carrie in Paris, coded.
It really is Carrie in Paris in that big dress waiting on the bed for like
Except
him to come home.
Except instead of Oscar De La Renta, it's a strap on.
Right. It's a complicated strap on.
And like how Miranda is it to like be putting on a strap on and be like, this is ridiculous. I hate doing this. What do I do here? Like, that's so
in,
funny.
Just in the background.
That is
God,
so funny.
And she slithers fully nude out of that, like
the
whatever that egg was.
Sensory deprivation tank.
I was sobbing because, like, Cynthia's so funny and, like, she's so confident and, like, does not give a fuck and will do anything for the comedy and is like, you want me to be completely nude in a sensory deprivation tank and then kind of, like, slide out of it like Final Destination or something?
Like Noomi Rapace in Prometheus.
Sarah Jessica Parker would never.
Just in my mind, I just think what I love the most about the show is I think of Sam Irby like texting Cynthia like, I'm going to do something crazy. We're doing something crazy this week. And Cynthia's like, I'm game. I love it.
Down.
I think you're so funny and smart and I'm down. And I just like, to me, that makes me happy because I see a lot of that here. Like she's so down to like have fun.
It's all on Cynthia, not Sarah, not Charlotte really yet. It's really
not yet.
It's all Cynthia for just to be a full ass clown. I mean, she is such a clown in this show. It's amazing.
I like Charlotte. Charlotte also though, I was worried about how like having teen children like as a regular part of the cast would work because that always is sort of like irritating or can be irritating when you just like throw in a kid. But like Charlotte's kids, I'm enjoying so far. And to be fair, Lindsay and I have only seen 3 episodes, but I think that they're actually providing laughs, not necessarily interest, but like when they're on screen, like it makes me laugh. Like when someone made a joke calling Lily Eilish and then Rock laughed, I laughed. I was like, okay, this is like, we can have kids to this show and I could laugh. It's sort of like when your friend gets pregnant and you're like, oh, there goes the dynamic. And then the kid gets a little older and you're like, this is fine. This is okay.
I can live with this. Just added a new person.
I can live with this.
Yeah, I liked when Lily wrote like a song about being privileged. Yeah. I'm like, okay, this is going to be great. Like whatever we're introducing here is going to be fantastic.
Unfortunately, there is an episode coming up because I've seen more where The Weeknd shows up and takes Lily to LA.
Stop it.
I know you're joking, but it's real. It could happen. It could happen.
Lily Rose York Goldenblatt. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
Exactly.
I just got signed. His name's Tedros.
Tedros?
Bobby Lindsay, thank you both so much for talking with us about this Bobby's favorite television show ever made.
Thank you.
People should listen to Who Weekly not just for their And Just Like That coverage, but for everything else that they do. I know this gets thrown at you too a lot, but like, but just for our listeners who are not as familiar with your podcast, which again, I think that overlap is pretty.
Yeah.
But is that it's about these celebrities, but it's all or non-celebrities, but it's also really a really sharp like cultural and media critique. So. People should definitely give it a listen.
Yes, and you're going on tour, and I have tickets for New York, so
you
got to.
You do?
Oh, yes.
Amazing.
One of the few, the proud, the brave.
We're going on tour. We have to work this into our show, I think. It's too, like, the fact that we're going on tour, like, while this show is airing is going to be a real problem for me in terms of not talking about it.
Do you want to plug dates, or is everywhere sold out?
It's all on whoweekly.us/live, and anywhere that you see that might be sold out, we're adding new shows, so don't get stressed.
Great. All right. Well, we're looking forward to more of your coverage of In Just Like That. Bobby Berger, Lindsay Weber, thank you so much to you both.
Thanks for having us. Still Watching will be back in just a moment, and when we return, the fabulous fashions and the not-so-glamorous looks.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase every day. Then grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Terms apply.
All right, I think it's time for us to talk about clothes, jewelry, face masks. It's time to do killer looks and fashion roadkill. So, what What style stood out? Chris, I feel like you are dying to say something.
I am. You know who I thought had a really lovely outfit this episode? I loved Miranda's like green jumpsuit that she wore.
Her coveralls?
Her coveralls that she wore to the taping where she really should have put her phone away, but I understand why she kept it. I thought she looked great. She looked like fun and like age appropriate is not the word I want to use, but it felt like a really nice look for her, especially after episode 2 and the green bucket hat and of it all.
when she was rather disheveled on the beach. I personally want to give a shout out to Richard Burton's raincoat.
Oh, yeah.
I think Charlotte's dog was very well dressed. Fashion Roadkill, I don't know if this graded on you guys the same way as me, but is Charlotte really so tacky that she would be wearing a Burberry dress, a Burberry apron, and Burberry mules all at the same time in the same plaid?
Yes.
I do think Richard's.
No, I don't
but
know.
She has actual
know.
Money. I feel like that's something that you wear when you're kind of like a wannabe.
Right.
When you're already on the Upper East Side, don't you kind of look at that check and
that's
say, like,
fair
that is
point.
Too
that is...
outs? Like, that is an overstatement. Like, we are understated wealth. We are stealth wealth.
Yeah.
But nothing about Charlotte was ever really that understated. Like, she wanted, like, you know, she wanted the wealth and what I can see it. That is true.
I know. I saw her and this is saying maybe more about me than it is about the show, but I saw like try hardy rich girls at my high school. Mm. Like,
sure.
That does
like,
scan.
Coach bags with like a big C.
Ludicrously capacious bag.
I think that kind of Upper East Side wealth, like I went to go see a play on the Upper East Side recently and it's a very like, you know, blue hair crowd and you know, hoity toits from up there. And it's the kind of clothing that is not branded at all, obviously. But you just look, it's just like simple sweaters and whatever. And you're like, that just looks expensive. Like
it was
you just
thousands
kind
of dollars.
Yeah, you just know that the woman's like wrap is like made from, like they just killed the camel that morning and skinned. They didn't even have to kill the camel, but they did anyway.
The camel gave willingly its
right,
skin.
Right, right. I know what you mean, but I do think that Charlotte is. Even still, that's a little bit strivey. Like, even though she's been ensconced in this forever.
Just feels tacky for somebody.
A little tacky for
who
sure.
would, you know, turn up their nose at carnations. Yeah. I feel like it's
maybe it's more
much.
Of a Carrie thing to wear matchy, matchy, matchy like that. Mm. I liked Carrie's Monopoly sweatshirt.
She's been wearing some interesting sweatshirts this season.
Oh, she had a New York Times
sweatshirt.
The New York
Times one and the Monopoly one. Yeah. Like, it's sort of downtown for her, I think, given...
Into her cash just at home clothes. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fun mode for her. I was actually realizing that, like, a lot of, because I think we did something on our Instagram. It was linked to a post about, like, the worst fashions on the show. Or Sarah Jessica Parker was interviewed about it. Anyway, I think a lot of the bad looks on the show, weirdly, are my favorite because I remember them the most.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious to see in aggregate after this season is done, like, are some of, like, the weirder ones going to be the ones that, you know, are enduring?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that weird sweatshirts like that, like, stick in the mind.
Oh, 100%.
They're not, I mean, she looks great, but, like, I don't know.
Feels very appropriate also that she and Seema both would have, like, designer face masks that don't actually do anything to keep
not
you healthy.
Not N95s, right. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Louis Vuitton is not making a KN95.
I also like that when we saw Carrie at home, she was, like, in different scenes eating something different. Mm. Or, like, Seema comes over, she's like, I don't have COVID, and then cut to them immediately pouring wine.
Drinking
like,
wine.
Just,
yeah.
It's just like, again, Carrie's settling into her lady of leisure lifestyle, and
I'm not mad at it.
I enjoy it. Mm. Well, that does it for this episode of Still Watching. As ever, you can email us your, I don't know, fan theories, fashion...
Your favorite.
Critiques.
Ladies whatever, on the show.
Yeah,
your script pitches for Che Pasa.
Your punch-ups.
There you go. Or other things for Tony Danza to do. That's stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. We should mention also a programming note. Hillary will be on vacation next week, so we will have our own Joy Press filling in.
Yes. She filled in. She came to the final episode of Succession.
Hillary's son broke up with his girlfriend in Amsterdam.
Yeah, so he's flying back.
So Hillary's on a KLM flight right after
this. It's a whole family scene, yeah.
Yeah. But yes, again, email us stillwatchingpod@gmail.com or you can find me on Twitter at Rylaws, R-I-L-A-W-S.
And you can find me on Twitter at Christress, C-H-R-I-S-T-R-E-S-S.
And you can find me on Twitter at Hillibuster with two R's. This has been Still Watching from Vanity Fair. Our producer is Emily Elias, and we had production help from Peyton Hayes. We had technical assistance from Gabe Quiroga. Stephen Valentino is our executive producer. Our theme music is by Alexis Quadrado. We'll be back next Thursday for episode 4. Looking forward to seeing you then.
I'm not allowed to call you my little cannoli anymore? Who am I offending now? The pastry cream or the shell?
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.